Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. I'm one of those people who sometimes feels a bit of anxiety when I go home at night. And why is that? All that clutter. The papers, the books, the toys, the laundry, the kitchen. Is that really a three-day-old bowl of my kids' mushy cereal in the corner? Why didn't I take care of that? You get the feeling. Well, there is an entire decluttering industry out there. One of its brightest lights, Japanese decluttering guru Marie Kondo, now has a new Netflix series about how to spark joy, as she says, and find calm through decluttering. There is some research now linking clutter to stress and life dissatisfaction, so it's time to get real about the way we live with all of our stuff. This hour on Point. The emotional toll of clutter. And you can join us. Does this sound familiar? Is your house full of stuff that you don't use or not sure why you even have? Does it drive you crazy? Or maybe does it not bother you at all? Are these things surrounding you giving you comfort, sentimental value? What do you make of the decluttering craze? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us today from Chicago is Joseph Ferrari, professor of psychology at DePaul University, where he studied the causes of clutter and its impact on emotional well-being. He's also author of the book Still Procrastinating, The No Regrets Guide to Getting It Done. Joseph Ferrari, welcome to On Point.
How are you? Welcome. Looking forward to talking to you.
So we're looking forward to talking to you, too. It's great to have you. Also with us today from Washington is Nicole Anzia. She is owner of Neatnik, a home office and personal organizing business. She's also the organizational columnist for The Washington Post. We've got links to her columns, including her latest one, Five Spaces That Would Make Your House Much Easier for You and Your Family to Live In. Those links are at onpointradio.org. Nicole, welcome to you.
Thanks. Hi, Meghna.
It's great to have you both here. So first of all, I just want to start with a little bit of sound from Marie Kondo's new Netflix series that just dropped at the beginning of this year. It's called Tidying Up. Here's a little sound from the trailer. Here it is.
They have so much stuff.
It's a never-ending battle to fight the clutter.
With the baby coming, we got to get our stuff in order.
We had to downsize from a four-story house to a two-bedroom apartment.
I lost my husband. I don't know that I have everything it takes to get rid of his belongings.
So, Nicole, let me just actually begin with you here. Marie Kondo is obviously, she's known very much for her take on decluttering. She's a wild bestseller with her books here. Are you impressed, or what do you make of the fact that she's got a new Netflix series?
Yeah, there is actually a lot I've liked about her book and now the Netflix series. There's a lot about her method that is really important. She's trying to change the way people look at their possessions and to cherish the things that they have and to simplify their lives. So those are all valuable lessons, right? And I like how she breaks the home organizing process down into categories and smaller pieces. Also a good lesson for those of us who may be looking at a New Year's resolution of organizing our home. It's best to break it down into little smaller bits. And, you know, the other thing I love, actually, is that she doesn't tell her clients to run out and buy a bunch of bins and pretty organizing items to help with their homes. Instead, she's not going for perfection. She's just going for, you know, people to appreciate the things they have around them and be able to find what they need when they need to.
Yeah. Okay. So Joseph Ferrari, let me turn to you. I mean, obviously, as you heard in the introduction, this is something that I think about a lot in my own home, and I'm sure lots of other folks do too as well. But it almost seems like there is this like decluttering trend or craze. Is it there for a reason, or is it, you know, yet one of those other trends that sort of comes and goes?
Unsure as to whether it comes and goes. I would comment that in this current phase with this woman, this author, I just want people to understand that this is nothing new that she's come up with. There's an organization called the Institute for Challenging Disorganization, ICD, that was associated with. That's how I first got involved with this topic maybe a dozen years ago. And so what she's saying is nothing new. You need to strategize. You need to organize. And so I like to give credit where credit is due. I don't like it when people take other people's ideas and run with it. But so I just wanted to make that. And there is a difference between joy and happiness. I think what she's saying is that these items bring people happiness. But joy is a very different emotion. It's a much deeper emotion. You know, Christmas time, we don't sing happiness to the world. We sing joy to the world. It's a deeper feeling that you get, a deeper sense than happiness. Smiling and being content is very fleeting. And so what I want to see is whether, you know, items give people a deep sense of joy. I tell people, don't look for relics, look for relationships. It's really much more important about the relationships that we create.
Well, if I may, I mean, I'm not sure I fully agree with you. I mean, look, I haven't gone through the whole Marie Kondo methodology in my house, obviously. Sure. But from what I've seen, when she's asking people, you know, does this item, like, hold this item, does it spark joy? And if it does, keep it. I think she's actually, in my view, from what I see, she's actually asking people to look beyond, does it just sort of give you casual happiness? Because, you know, the stuff that really has a deeper meaning for you, she's using the word joy, that's what you keep. The rest of it, you know, get rid of it.
Right. And interesting that that's a contrary suggestion that she offers than what I've heard from the ICD decluttering experts. Uh-huh. They say don't hold the item. Never touch the item, because once you touch something, you have a tactile sense, and it's going to be much harder to get rid of. Instead, let somebody else hold it and ask you, do you need this? But basically, they claim, organize yourself. Go through and see what you have. Do you really need 18 spatulas? Do you really need 24 pairs of black pants? So you organize everything. They say it's the closet, it's the kitchen, and books are the three big target areas of clutter that people have. Right. And so organize everything. Don't go run to the container store yet. First organize, and then look to see, wow, I have so many of these books that I've never read. Wow, look at all these pairs of pants. Wow, look at all these gadgets that I have. So and they say don't hold it. Don't touch it. Have somebody else touch it. Because you're going to more likely to keep it if you touch it. So, I mean, there's some interesting differences that she offers.
Well, Nicole Anzia, jump back in here. What do you think?
In terms of whether to hold it or not, I mean, I think it just depends on the person and that individual. I find that it's not as much a question about whether or not they hold it and can decide whether or not it sparks joy. For a lot of my clients, it's actually more, and I do agree with Dr. Ferrari about, you know, pulling all of the light categories in your home together and assessing what you have first and then making decisions. And this is what Marie Kondo advises people to do. But my biggest thing that I see is that people can decide that they want to get rid of something, but the way to get rid of it is paralyzing to them, right? They can decide, okay, I'm ready to give away 10 pairs of pants, right? But then where is that going to go? and how do I do that? And then they just stop.
Yeah.
Because it's like you can't answer that last question. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think, you know, the holding and not holding, you know, that's something we can all sort of debate. And I think that, you know, probably most people are not going to pick up every possession in their home and hold it and, you know, ask it whether or ask themselves whether it sparks joy and say thank you. you know, that may not be, you know, doable for everybody. But I, you know, to Dr. Ferrari's point, I mean, what I see as the biggest problem is people just buying
all the time.
So, yes, it's important to ask whether or not it sparks joy. But what about, and this is something I'm working with clients this year, thinking about why you're actually buying it in the first place.
Right. Yeah, can I jump in?
Sure.
Wonderful comments, Nicole. The studies have shown that people will spend about $5,000 a year on impulse buying, just buying stuff. And they have up to $7,000 worth of clutter, items in their home that they never use. That's a lot of wasted money, resources, if you would. And I agree with Nicole. Re-gift, reuse. You know, this year for Christmas, my wife decided to shop our home. What we did was we found some unused or gently used item and gave that away to people along with something new, but we were able to re-gift, reuse kinds of things. That's great.
Right.
Think about the use of other people. See, the problem is we focus too much on me and we forget that life is we, that we need to instead help other people. Maybe you can't use the set of old china dishes that your mother had and your kids aren't interested in it because they don't use china like that. But find some transitional housing that's beginning to emerge. Maybe there's a Habitat for Humanity new house being built.
That needs it.
And give it to a new family.
Well,
somebody else use it.
Joseph Ferrari, forgive me for interrupting. I want to talk, throughout the hour more about methodologies and ways to attack the clutter problem. But I also really want to get deeper here and get to this idea of, or explore this idea about the emotional toll that a lot of people feel clutter in their homes is causing them. I mean, Nicole here, do you have an increasing number of clients who come to you and say, I've got to get rid of this because I just can't stand it anymore. Like, I feel stressed out or it feels like I hear more people saying that with every passing year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I'm hearing more of it necessarily this year, mm-hmm. although Marie Kondo's show has certainly brought it to the forefront. I mean, I've been doing this for 12 years. And I'm busy. So I don't know that it's new. I think that it's constantly on people's minds. I thought that the finding in Dr. Ferrari's study about how older adults and their clutter problems were actually causing them, life dissatisfaction. We often think when we're buying things, right, they're making us happy. For some reason, right? We're buying them. We're looking forward to having this. We're buying it to remember something. We think they're going to bring us happiness. But in the end, they end up making us unhappy.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk more about why that is when we come back. We're talking this hour about the battle against clutter. Yes, Japanese decluttering guru Marie Kondo has a new Netflix series. It's out. A lot of people are watching it and thinking about how to maybe apply her methodologies to their own home. But the bigger question is, why does all this stuff make us so miserable? Nicole Anzia joins us. She's the organizational columnist for The Washington Post. Joseph Ferrari is also with us as well. He's a professor of psychology at DePaul University. Do you want to get rid of your clutter? Or does all that stuff make you feel good? This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about clutter and why so many people feel stressed out about the clutter in their homes, or not everyone. Maybe you're one of those folks who loves having stuff around you for its sentimental value. But there does seem to be a burgeoning attention being paid to decluttering. For example, Japanese decluttering guru Marie Kondo, best-selling author. She has got a new series on Netflix called Tidying Up with Marie Kondo. And here's a scene from it where Kondo visits the Mercia family. They're struggling with the chaos of their clutter after downsizing from a house to an apartment.
We've been living here for a year and a half now. And I must say, it hasn't felt like home.
I mean, we're doing the best we can because, it's a smaller space than what we're used to. But we feel stressed at home because of the clutter.
It's an unnecessary pressure and stress for them to live tight like this.
That's a scene from Tidying Up with Marie Kondo, the new Netflix series. I'm joined today by Nicole Anzia. She's owner of Neatnik, a home office and personal organizing business. She's also the organizational columnist for The Washington Post. Joseph Ferrari is also with us. He's professor of psychology at DePaul University. He studied the causes of clutter and its impact on emotional well-being. And Professor Ferrari, before the break, Nicole had mentioned that you've done specific research, specific surveys on this, at least one where you talked to, 1,600 people? people with clutter problems? I mean, what were
We had a sample of 1,600 persons who had self-identified as having clutter issues. Now, keep in mind, clutter is not the same as hoarding.
Right.
Hoarding is a psychiatric disorder. The difference I explain to people is if you think of hoarding as lots of the same thing, and clutter is just lots of stuff.
Okay.
What was one of the fascinating things, out of the 1,600 people who I self-identified with a clutter problem, we only had 50 men. And I remember asking these ICD, these declutter experts, why is that? Is clutter not a male problem? And they said, oh, no, men have clutter. But for men, they define it as their stuff, as their toys, as, something different. Women see clutter as a problem much more than men, and I find that interesting.
Before
you jump in,
Sure.
This is a new topic of study in psychological science. I mean, really, before we did this, there was a book chapter and an article in Italy, and that was it. So great questions, great dialogue, lots of pros and cons, but we don't have the answers yet.
Right, okay.
We really haven't studied that.
Yeah, so excellent point. I'm glad that you reminded us of that. So I'm just going to throw out a theory. Nicole, respond to my theory here, because this potential gender difference in how people view clutter. I think it's really fascinating. And again, this is a theory not based on any science whatsoever, but I was thinking about this morning. I wonder if it's, I'm just thinking, like, my mom, she cleaned the house obsessively. She was a champion declutterer. I just wonder if women see, as they're growing up, other women in their lives doing the majority of the housework and the cleaning, and that sort of sets ourselves up mentally for having certain expectations for how we ought to run our households. And when we see clutter rising up, is that why it's seen as a negative thing versus just, like, our stuff?
I don't necessarily think it's that as much as how women operate in the household, right? Oftentimes, they're the ones who are making the meals. Not always. Again, I don't want to brush too broad a stroke. But they're with their children more. They're in their house more. They may be working out of their house. So I feel like it's a little bit more just that it has to do with how women operate in the house and the time they spend in the house. And this, is always changing in comparison to their partner or husband. I would just like to add that I think a lot of my clients, for some of my clients, not a lot, but I mostly work with women. However, some of them call me because their husbands have asked them to call me. So I do see that a little bit, but I think, in terms of who's seeing it and who's not seeing it. I mean, it affects everybody's psyche, whether or not a man wants to admit that it's clutter.
Well, so Joseph Ferrari, though, why is it that in the studies that you've done so far, that people are reporting when they're troubled by it, that it actually contributes to lower life satisfaction? I mean, that's such a profound outcome to something. I don't want to say clutter is trivial, but it doesn't seem like it should have that much power over us.
It does. Let me give a shout out to my colleague who's been joining me in this journey of research, Dr. Catherine Roster from the University of New Mexico. And Catherine and I found that actually we call it the dark side of home, that actually, as Nicole mentioned earlier, the more stuff people have, the more clutter, the lower their sense of home, their sense of life satisfaction exists. And we found this with a graduate student, Kendall Crum, here at DePaul. We even found this among women of color in looking at our samples. So we're beginning to find that the more possessions you own, the more things you have, the lower your sense of satisfaction. And that's interesting to me. Why? I'm not sure. Will we find that with low-income individuals who don't have a lot? We identify. There's a body of literature in consumer psychology that says we identify with our items, which is why if I lose it, I'm upset. But if someone steals my cell phone, let's say, I'm very upset. I feel violated. But if my cell phone is lost in a natural disaster, again, it's not my cause, something else. I feel upset, but I look at it, well, at least I'm alive.
Yeah.
That's very fascinating to me.
Well, I mean, could part of it be, again, we're just all sort of all throwing ideas out there, but could part of it be that we're all living in a culture that the messaging is, you need this stuff, you need more stuff, it fulfills you. But then when we acquire it, we don't feel fulfilled at all.
What's happened is we've taken our wants and we've made them needs. Oh, absolutely. You know, I've been asked several times by your producers, give me your smartphone number. I said, I can give it to you, but I never put it on. It's used for emergencies. I don't have to have that. I need it for when I need it, I use it. We live in a culture where, yeah, my wants have become my needs. And, you know, Gandhi once said, there's not enough for everyone's greed, but there is enough for everyone's need. If we could just scale back a little bit and give to others, this is the bigger issue, and this is what fascinates me as a social community psychologist. How do we create people? The problem isn't abundance. The problem is attachment.
Mm.
What happens is we become attached to these things. No one says you have to live like a pauper, but on the other hand, you don't have to become so attached to the things.
Right.
So, all right, fine. Look at what gives you happiness. Look at what gives you joy. Just don't need 12 of them. You know, maybe just one thing. Yeah, you want to hold on to the drawings your kids have done when they were kids, but you don't need 9 boxes of them. Yeah. Hold on to a few of them. Those are important.
I don't mean to laugh there, but you really hit on one that hits close to home for me about every single drawing my kids have done. Nicole Anzia, jump in here. What do you think about this problem of attachment as Joseph Ferrari is talking about?
I do think that is an issue, obviously. I mean, people feel attached to certain things. But back to his point for a moment about, you know, just all of this stuff and why there's some discontent, even though we have all of these things. And I attribute that mostly because then nothing is really special. There's so much stuff surrounding us that, you know, the things that are special to us kind of get swept up in all that other stuff. And so it's hard to place a better value or a higher value on specific things. But the attachment, I mean, I'm a mother. I have a lot of my kids' art. I'm not going to lie, right? But this might be, you know, let me just make a point here that organizing and decluttering in recent years have become synonymous concepts, and they're different. So they go hand in hand, but the main purpose of organizing is not necessarily to discard things.
Right.
So your closets and your drawers can be packed, but they can be totally organized and you can find what you want. Or you could have a relatively clutter-free house, but you can never find what you're looking for. So by all means, if you value your kids' art, if you want to keep every drawing that they've made, that can be okay as long as it's done properly and you're making a decision to do that. But it's when people cannot make a decision because they're surrounded by so much that they can't move forward.
Right. So the paralysis of all that stuff. Joseph, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. Forgive me. I definitely want to hear from you. But neither of you will be surprised to know that our phone lines are literally bursting with callers here. So forgive the interruption, but I definitely want to get some stories of you know, America's battle with clutter. Let's start in Atlanta, Georgia, where Charlie's calling from. Charlie, you're on the air.
Yes, this is one of the best programs that I've ever heard on NPR.
Wow.
All of the points that your guests are making are absolutely right on. This is a huge psychological problem, and we live in a society that is jamming, consuming down our throats every day. Buy, buy, buy. Consume, consume, consume. And, you know, I'll tell you a funny story. I'm a guitar player, right? Among guitar players, we have a saying that every one of us has GAS, which stands for guitar acquisition syndrome.
Yeah.
You know?
How many do you have?
I own 13 guitars,
okay.
Yeah. But they're all different. They're not all the same. I collected them over many, many years because I'm 65 years old. But I got a real lesson when my parents passed away, and my brother and I had to clean out their apartments. And I said to myself at that time, I do not want to be in this position. I don't want to leave just a big mess for somebody to come in and clean up. It is my responsibility to get rid of the stuff that I've accumulated over the years. And so that's what I'm going to dedicate myself to in 2019, because it, as your guest pointed out, it's paralyzing.
Yeah.
It's paralyzing. It prevents you from doing other things that you would like to do.
Well, Charlie,
I made an absolute pledge that I will not purchase anything unless I need it, I need to use it, or I can sell it for a profit. That's it.
Charlie, thank you so much for your call. Nicole Anzia, I love Charlie's idea of you know, decluttering so that you don't hand down the burden to the next generation as well.
Right. Yes, I have a lot of clients who feel similarly and will hire me for that very reason. I mean, if you've ever had to clear out a parent's belongings, and a lot of our parents lived in their houses for 30 and 40 years, you know how overwhelming that is. And so a lot of my clients do feel sort of an obligation to their children to not leave that, which is a good one. The thing about it is it took a long time to accumulate that stuff, and it's going to take a long time to get rid of it. So you cannot expect to do it in a weekend, a week, a month. I mean, these are big jobs, and they need time and they need direction. And if you think it can be done sooner, you're going to be overwhelmed.
Well, isn't that part of the problem, right? That they are big jobs. And so finding the time, the ability to sort of figure out strategically how to do it, it feels overwhelming. Even the idea of decluttering feels overwhelming.
Yeah, right. And that's why I like how... Oh, go ahead.
Charlie makes a great point. We're taught to buy, but we buy things that don't last. They're created not to last, so you buy them again. Buy them again. And I agree with this notion of the family giving it, give it away. Bring joy now to the family. You know, watch them joy. That it's very hard to get people who have lived in their homes 30 years to want to part with some of these items. Mm. But the point is, as you begin to think about downsizing, is how can this bring happiness, joy, maybe deep joy, to my grandchild, to my grandson, my granddaughter. You know, watch the joy on their face now so that, and not when you've passed.
Right. Well, let's go to Shelley, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Shelley, you're on the air.
Hi. I was so excited to hear about this topic because I'm considered in the minority. I live a very, very practical, minimalistic life, and I can't function if my home is not orderly. It's very, very organized. And I have two small children. I'm a single mom. And what I think the important thing is yes, we consume way too much. We have way too much stuff. We also need to teach our children that there's, you know, we only need so much. And so what we do is I have two bins for them. They're very small. So anything that they, is very sentimental, like a special project that they've done at school, I store in that. Other things we rotate. We keep on the refrigerator or magnet board for a month, and then we recycle. Books we donate, we give to churches, shelters. We rotate that as well. And I tell everybody, if it's birthdays or Christmases, that it's more important for us to spend time together and teach them that's, you know, to value that. But that these are things, there's things that we need, there's things that we want.
So, Shelley, can I just jump in here for a second? Because do your kids, your kids, they're on board with these ideas and they follow your lead on this? Because, you know, there are a lot of kids out there who are just like, they're whirling dervishes of disorganization.
They do. And I think it's because they understand how important it is and how good it feels to be able to come into a house that is orderly.
Uh-huh.
And I think the thing is that I have friends that, you know, when they walk into my home, they can't believe it. But the thing is it's a way of life and it's a system. And once you start it, you just have to keep up with it. And you, like, for my kitchen, I have exactly what I need, you know, what I utilize. I don't have an overabundance of everything. Like, even with clothes, like pajamas, like how many PJs do you need? Or, you know, how many pairs of shoes do you need? And I feel like it is hard, especially with children, because they see what their friends have and they're constantly bombarded with advertisements and things to buy. So I think it's really important that we just try to live a life and we teach like, I teach my children about kids that don't have nearly as much, or how many of this, you know, do we need, or that do we need?
So, Shelley, forgive me for jumping in here. I'm so sorry, but we're going to come up on a break here in a couple of minutes, and you've presented us with a couple of questions that I want to turn back to our guests here. Shelley, thank you for your call. Nicole Anzia, when Shelley said it's about crafting a way of life, I was very taken by that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's true. You have to, well, congratulations to Shelley, because it sounds like she's doing a really great job. And it is a way of life. Organizing and decluttering are not things that you do once. They're things that are ongoing, and they should be ongoing in your lives. As your kids grow, as the months go by, as the years go by, things are coming in and out of your house constantly. And so you have to think about what in your house is of real value and matters to you and your family, and what does not. And I would just add that with children, it's really hard. They go to these birthday parties, they get these party bags, you know, they're given free stuff, it feels like, everywhere they go. And it's really hard, but I feel like talking to them and taking the time to impart what Shelley was talking about wants and needs, and also sharing with them that there are a lot of other kids who could be happy with these things, and we don't need all of them, and why don't we help? So they're kids are generally pretty receptive to that message. A lot of parents will say, you know, they don't want to get rid of anything. They won't get rid of anything. But I find that that's not usually the truth.
Well, we have to take a really quick break here. We're going to hear a lot more when we come back. We're talking about clutter and why Joseph Ferrari's research is showing that it does actually contribute for a lot of people to lower life satisfaction and what to do about it. We'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie, and I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
Smart journalism, fascinating topics. Words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the battle against clutter and why, for many Americans, all the clutter in our homes leads to lower life satisfaction. Today's conversation was sparked by the fact that decluttering guru Marie Kondo has a new Netflix series. It's called Tidying Up. And there was a particular episode of Tidying Up that I actually found to be really, really emotionally poignant. It features Southern Californian Margie, who had recently lost her husband of 40 years. And it had been 9 months since her husband had passed away. And Margie said that she wanted to move forward in her life or with her life. So she asked Marie Kondo to help her declutter her house. But it was very hard because Margie talked about in this episode how she attaches the things that her husband used to own and wear with very profound memories for her. So let's listen to a scene. This is where Margie's talking about how hard it is to go through her husband's clothes.
You know, I looked at those shirts and I thought of all the hopes and dreams he had while he, you know, was in his Hawaiian shirt phase. And then it went into the cowboy phase. And, you know, it's just kind of a real jolt to see all this life, you know, that we've lived and the dreams that he had, and, you know, they're now in a pile on the floor and my closet is empty. And that was a very big jolt for me today.
That's Margie in a scene from Marie Kondo's new Netflix series, Tidying Up. Now, Joseph Ferrari, I wanted to play this in particular because we've talked repeatedly about the attachment that we have to our things and the sentimentality or emotion that we bring to objects in our lives. But you hear in Margie's voice and her story there, you know, there's a reason for all of this, that things that we acquire through time and our life experiences.
Memories.
They are memories. And it's like those memories are imbued in the physical objects. So it's really hard to let go of them.
Yeah, I agree with that. This woman is still grieving. This woman is still hurting. And we need to respect that and we'd honor that. I would help her try to reframe. I'm not a clinical psychologist, but I would help her reframe that in terms, how can these items give other people joy? How can you help? I'm certainly not equating it to it, but if you think about people who have transplants, you know, when they're asked to give an organ, how can this help someone else's life be enriched? How can you move forward? Would the memory of your husband or your wife or live on and by helping somebody else? So I would certainly understand her. I certainly understand her views and. You know, have to be sympathetic, and we'd be supportive of all of that. But I try to help her to think about how doing this. I really liked Shelley from before, teaching children, teaching each other that we need to give to others. You pay it forward, you pay it out. Don't have to hold on to yourself. So that's what I would. I would try to help her do that.
Yeah.
To consider how this helps someone else.
And so, Nicole Anzia, I don't know if you've ever had any clients who've been in the same place in their lives that, you know, perhaps...
I have.
Oh, yeah, so what's that been like?
Well, so I have not made it to this episode yet, so
oh,
I don't
okay.
know.
Okay, sorry, spoiler alert.
No. But, you know, I don't think it's any major rush for people. So, you know, she's been, you said 9 months, and she may be ready to start, but she probably needs to go at her own pace. Maybe, you know, I'm not sure again how it turns out, but I'm assuming or thinking that Marie Kondo is recommending that she keep, you know, a couple of every item that are special to her, or maybe take pictures of the very special things, or maybe, you know, and write something down about them. And to sort of, I think that especially with these clients, you need to break it down by categories. You can't do clothes and books and, you know, all of these things at once. You know, maybe one day you work for a couple of hours looking through the clothes and make a few decisions. And maybe what dictates what you keep is, you know, you agree to keep, you know, one small garment bag of things, you know, so limiting yourself in that way. But again, like Dr. Ferrari said, she's grieving.
Right.
It needs to happen at her own pace. And, you know, trying to do it too early is going to be counterproductive.
Yeah. I guess the reason why I really like that episode is because it's the one that fully acknowledges that you know, it's normal to have an emotional connection with some of your stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the external manifestation of the experience of our lives. And so that's sort of the flip side of we also have a lot of it. Well, Joseph Ferrari and Nicole Anzia, look, our phone lines are Virginia, Georgia, Maine, Ohio, Vermont. America wants to talk about clutter. So let's go to Mark, who's calling from Norfolk, Virginia. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi there. As a naval officer, my family and I move approximately every 2 to 3 years. And I found that when it's time to pack everything up, we get rid of so much stuff. And it's just stuff, really. But getting rid of it is actually cathartic.
Okay, and so if you're moving all the time and you're getting rid of stuff, how is it that you're acquiring so much more every time you have to move?
Well, with the advent of Amazon Prime, I realized that it's just accelerated the accumulation of stuff. And while my wife is the primary purchaser, I've been a culprit as well. And the throwaway, one-time, limited lifespan objects that we find will hold on to broken items even. Maybe if things lasted longer or items were better quality, would we still have a need or the desire to fulfill the need for stuff?
Yeah.
You know, the poor lady in the episode who attaches memories to her husband's items make me wonder if people with lots of items who are living dissatisfied lives, is it a loss of appreciation or a numbing of appreciation for the many items that we collect?
Well, Mark, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Macon, Georgia. Mary's calling from Macon. You're on the air.
Hi, Megan. Thank you for taking my call. I started reading Marie Kondo's book, The Magic of Tidying, at the start of the new year, and I have found it really helpful for just sort of relieving my conscience. I realized that in the past years I've been experiencing this perfect storm of pressures, reasons not to discard things. I think it's a combination of feeling like I'm buying with my children's happiness in mind. I imagine every little toy is something that's going to make them smarter and make them happier.
Yeah.
So I see myself as piling up, you know, piles of potential happiness. But then when it comes time to acknowledge that we've got all this clutter, it's like I have to face the fact that maybe I've misspent money. So I feel like I'm fiscally
responsible if I hold on to things. And then every time I think about getting rid of something, I imagine the landfill because everyone's trying to be more eco-conscious.
Right.
So we have all these reasons to feel guilty. And what Maria does is sort of reframe the act of discarding. She helps you to find something positive that the item accomplished for you that maybe you didn't even know that it did. And she just gives you a way to deal with the problem of the conscience.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for your call. And just as sort of an addendum to that, as Joseph Ferrari was saying earlier in the program, he also there are lots of other places that these items could go that don't necessarily have to be at the landfill. But Mary, thank you for your call. Let's go to South Portland, Maine, where Nick is calling. Nick, you're on the air.
Hi, this is a great show. Thank you so much. It's like you guys are in my head.
Mine too, to be honest.
The anxiety piece is a huge part for me. For years, I've been trying to like whittle down. And in our household, my family, I've tried to institute a 6-month rule. So if you haven't used it, seen it, or, you know, taken it out of someplace for 6 months or more, you don't need it unless it's like seasonal clothes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
is it working? Are people adhering to the rule?
Well, it's hard with 3 kids under the age of 7. So they don't really play along with that. So with them, like the holidays especially, it's really hard to get like our in-laws and relatives to like buy into get us experiences.
Yeah.
Don't get us stuff. Because it's every year it's boxes out and boxes in.
Yeah,
with toys and stuff. But
you know, Nick, though, I think you should take heart because what I'm hearing over the course of this hour that there's a lot of power in laying down these life habits. So maybe your kids aren't on board now, but they're seeing that there's this other way of living. So, Nick, thank you so much for your call. Joseph Ferrari, let me turn back to you because Nick's 6-month rule reminded me. I wanted to ask you, you know, you've written books and done research about procrastination. Have you found a link between the ability or inability to deal with clutter and procrastination?
We have, and the topic of procrastination is a totally, you don't have time for that today. That's another topic for another time, because procrastination has got nothing to do with time management. So that's another issue. When we found that procrastinators, of course, are more likely to have more clutter, more stuff. One form of procrastination that we study is indecision, decisional procrastination. And, of course, as you've heard, some of the individuals reported they can't decide whether they keep it. So the greater your indecision, of course, the more clutter you have. I really loved that when I heard Mary talked about the landfill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have to create items that can be disposed. There's nothing wrong with plastic bags, except that they don't they're not biodegradable. So let's create biodegradable plastic bags that dissolve in 4 months, 3 months. You know, the product is not the problem. I think that's the issue.
Right.
And it was really fascinating to hear Mark's comment earlier about military families, because I'm also studying now the meaning of home, psychological home. What does home mean? And that, too, is probably another topic. But one of the areas that sparked my interest was talking to military families who would say, I have a sense of home, but my home is not a building because every 6 months, every 2 years, my dad would have to move or, you know, everything. Pretty often. So that's kind of interesting. And in terms of Nick, I would say borrow. Have kids borrow things.
Uh-huh.
We have play dates. Why not play products where people, you know, borrow every few months? Kids don't become bored with it. You have the items rotate around. We used a lot of items when our kids were growing up from our public library. They had great resources that we could borrow that they could take on trips. They had to bring back. So we have to be creative.
Yeah. Well, it makes me wonder. I mean, adults do clothes swaps. Maybe we ought to have more toy swaps with kids. Let's go to Jim, who's calling from Massillon, Ohio. Jim, you're on the air.
Well, thank you. A quick note to Mark from the Navy. I had a farmer friend one time who said that 3 moves are as good as a fire. So I don't know. I think that's what he was talking about with the moving.
Yeah. But then he also said he's also said Amazon Prime, though, was his nemesis in acquiring new stuff. But Jim, go ahead.
Okay. I've been trying to help a woman I taught with for a number of years. She's in her mid-50s, inherited the house that her parents had and is living in it, has the parents' accumulation. They died a number of years ago. And what I faced, this is breaking, I think, a new topic into your conversation. What I faced is resistance to assistance. And I managed, after about 2 years of trying, to get one load out last weekend, as a matter of fact, three bags of clothing, mostly her mother's, a lawnmower and an old TV and a couple of other things on a trailer. But the house is still full of, you know, boxes from previous teaching positions, materials of former students, and all the stuff from her parents. So what about this resistance to assisting another person with decluttering?
Well, Jim, thank you for your call. Nicole Anzia, that seems a perfect one for you. What do you think?
I mean, in this instance, I feel like, you know, there may be a psychological component to some of this. And there are people who just have an incredibly hard time parting with anything. But as Dr. Ferrari said earlier, that's sort of a different category. However, I just wanted to make two other points. I hope that's okay.
Sure.
That the decision overload that Dr. Ferrari talked about is women in particular feel so bogged down with making so many decisions every day about so many things that then when they have to make a decision about whether to get rid of a toy or clothing or something in the house, it's like this, it's just almost too much, right? They cannot make so many decisions about where everything should go, and they feel responsible for everybody's stuff in the house. So that's one problem. And then I was just going to note that with Amazon Prime, the problem is not only that it's coming in, the problem is we're never returning anything.
Right.
So people always buy things and they say, if it doesn't fit, if I don't like it, if it doesn't work, I'll return it. But they never do. So that, I mean, Amazon Prime is a blessing and a curse, right? I mean, you can get things easily. You can get things you need easily and in a timely manner. But you can also then be stuck with things, again, that you cannot decide what to do with.
Right. You know, you didn't see me because you're in a different studio. But when you're talking about the decision making that that women in households have to do, and the maxing out of executive function, essentially, I was nodding my head.
Right, the mental load. Right,
have you heard
that
agreement.
Term, the mental load? Exactly.
If I could jump in there. What we're experiencing is decisional fatigue, but I'm not so sure it's a gender difference. The research doesn't really seem to imply that. It seems as men too can have decisional fatigue. What happens is after we've made so many decisions, we're much more fatigued, and it impacts our ability to self-control, self-regulate our abilities. But I think, Nicole, you make also another great point in terms of we buy and we keep because it's more effortful to get rid of. So much easier just to point and click and buy and then to have to box it back up and make sure it's in the same box and then have to go and have it picked up or drop it off someplace. So we are great excuse makers as human beings, as we would find out if we did a show on procrastination. There's always a reason.
We should, but we'll do it at another time.
Yeah, I know. I was waiting for that joke.
Sorry. Well, we just got about a minute and a half left here to go. And Nicole Anzia, I just want to ask you quickly. You know, I think if people want to, they have the desire to get a hold of the clutter in their lives, they've already taken major first steps, right? Just deciding this is what they want to do. But what if you're in a household where not everyone is on board, where you kind of have a difference of opinion about the clutter in the house? Asking for a friend.
Exactly.
Where would you start?
Yeah, yes, exactly. I mean, I think you have to pick your battles. So people have different organizational styles. People have different amounts of stuff. People value different things. So pick your battles. If, you know, for instance, in my house, I like to have our kitchen island cleared off at the end of the night. Okay, that's important to me. Something that's important to my kids is that I do not touch her Legos that she's just built. So I think you have to, you know, it's all about compromise. It's not about perfection. Nobody's house looks like it should be in a magazine. Pick your battles, do what you can, but keep up the effort.
Well, Nicole Anzia, owner of Neatnik, a home office and personal organizing business. She's also the organizational columnist for The Washington Post. Nicole, thank you. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you.
And Joseph Ferrari, professor of psychology at DePaul University, where he studies the causes of clutter and its impact on emotional well-being, also author of the book Still Procrastinating, The No Regrets Guide to Getting It Done. Professor Ferrari, it's been a great pleasure to have you as well. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much, and I do look forward to talking to you in the future.
We will definitely do that at some time. And listeners, go to onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio and keep sending us your stories about your battles with clutter. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.